I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. Boom, 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 boom. Yeah. So you wanna be a rider? Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the Red Room. We let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the Red Room.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest, and you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what, everybody?
2019!
Yeah! On this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. Lisa Bolakaja is out, but we got the Wu-Tang Clan in the house. Yeah. Getting ready for the new Wu-Tang Clan documentary coming out in May. You see that forever.
Wu-Tang, Wu-Tang.
Wu-Tang, baby.
All day, every day.
Cream, get the money. Dollar bills, y'all. Anyway, so we got a cool-ass episode for you guys today. Starting off, my man Tracy Grant, writer himself.
CCC, director, back in the
producer.
Ponderosa. Nice to be with you.
Exactly, exactly. How's life going with the marriage, man? Mr. Newlywed.
Marriage is good. Shout out to wifey.
Yeah, of course.
Welcome Stacey, to the game, my son.
Stacy, thank you. Stacy Price Grant. Tried to get her to come along today, but she sends her best.
So good.
And thanks to her, I'm allowed to continue to rock with my scripts, the pilots, one sample of which you are aware. There is the feature. There is a discussion about, speaking of Wu-Tang, another music biopic. Yeah. Let's not say his name.
Say who, but it's exciting.
And Chris was very supportive about that offline. Getting ready to do a web series. So I'm doing my thing.
Yes.
Not just taking up space in Hilliard's office.
What you trying to say, man? What you trying
to say? I'm taking up space in Hilliard's office.
Why you want to jump off like that?
I'm not speaking this episode.
Come on.
I'm gonna say 10 words.
Well, you're already at your limit.
Turn off that mic. Cut that mic.
Like, off, bitch. Then we got our big bro in the house, Jeff Thorne.
What?
Writer, producer himself. What's going down, Jeff?
You know what? I'm free. My show's done.
Are you free to do what you want?
I'm free. I'm out here gainfully and happily unemployed writing some specs. My Black Panther just wrapped up last weekend.
Are y'all nominated for something?
You know, we are nominated for an Image Award for Outstanding Children's Production.
Okay, yeah.
It's amazing. I don't even know what to say.
Well deserved.
You know,
it's all you.
It was
you and your team.
That's right. It was all just me. I did all the animation, all the voices. Exactly. It was just me. I am Marvel. Secretly, it's
Obi. Off air, Jeff gives it up for his writing team completely. Yeah, very, very team-oriented.
And the actors, everybody makes that show like they came to play.
Yes.
Team Panthers for real. For real. And that's it.
On what channel was it on?
People can still watch. Disney.
They can still
Disney
see it,
XD.
Right?
Yeah, and if you get the Disney app, it's just up. The whole season's just up. You can get it on.
Black
you
Panther's buy it. Quest.
I don't get any money out of it, but if you want to buy it, you can get it on YouTube. You can get it on YouTube where there's 5 free episodes anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You can get it on iTunes. You can get it on Amazon, the normal places.
Right.
It's a great show. We really did something different this last
My
season.
My husband, he's so funny. It's like he forgets things that are on TV. Because every week it'd come on and he's I'd be in there watching this cartoon. He'd be like, what are you watching?
You doing?
I'm like, for the fifth time,
dude,
this is Jeff Thorne's show.
You need to watch it. It's awesome.
And he's like, oh, yeah, like every freaking week.
People, you know, because it's a cartoon, but it is. Anyway, it's there for you. It's finished. It's a whole complete story like a book. Like you start from beginning. It's serialized. It's chapter. Right. So you can't come in the middle. You got to start from beginning and go to the end. But
let's give a shout out to those actors with those voices.
Oh, my God. The entire crew of those guys, James, Daisy, Roger, Laura, There's a
Ryan Go.
There's
Kat
so
Kuvari
many.
Was on there.
Kat
Kuvari.
Yeah, I mean, there's really too many, and I'm going to think. I'm not going to try to name everybody because when I miss one, then I'm a jerk. But they really they came to play. Everybody came to play.
Right. That's it.
I'm about to do a poster of just the Avengers, y'all.
Really?
By the time you hear this, it'll already be out, so I can spoil it. that's my gift to the cast. I'm going to do one of my little Avengers posters. I've made three of them, and I'm going to do one that's just for the cast of the show, the regular cast.
Awesome.
They were great, and you guys, you should watch. You should watch it. It's just fun. You'll have a good time. It's not the movie. It's not like the movie. It's different than the movie.
All right. Where you at, Chris? Well, I was like, where you at, Chris? What's up, Chris? Welcome to the show. now he ain't talking.
I said my 10 words.
Yeah, a lot to say before.
You said my 10 words. I'm good. I'm just...
Chris, just, Derek, everybody
yeah,
in
just,
the house.
I'm just... you know what I'm doing, which I shouldn't be doing because I have other things I should be doing. But... I'm so.
Isn't that always what you're doing?
You say that literally every time I'm in here.
Every week.
This is something I really shouldn't be doing.
You say that every time I'm in here.
I go, what her name is? What her name is?
I'm rewatching The Expanse.
Okay.
Have you seen this show?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I fucking love this show.
Yeah.
I've seen it before.
Good show.
And I'm four episodes in on the first season again. And the thing is, I love how good it is. It's so good later on, but I forgot how good it was in the beginning. How strong the acting choices, the casting choices they made were so really spot on. And it's just such an amazing show. And I just kind of wish it got more excitement.
Amazon just revived it.
Yeah,
right?
They did revive. Yeah, that's why I'm watching it again because I can't wait season four. But it's kind of like, you know, it's like as much hype as there is about Game of Thrones. I'm like, this is Game of Thrones in space. This is the Game of Thrones show in space, and it's more exciting.
Okay.
So real quick, Dark Phoenix trailer? Yes? No?
Please don't get me started.
I haven't seen it. I don't plan to see the movie.
What you got to say, Jeff? Tell it.
Just let the thing die.
I'm messing with comic book purists. I'm cool with the trailer. I feel like I could watch the movie, but I'm a bit too much of a purist. Like my issues I already see is like reconciling the 60s original X-Men with this new thing that they did later on. I may not be able to get past that.
All right.
But that's not a knock on the trailer or the film.
Do you want to hear the real story? Because I don't know if we have time.
Go ahead, give it to us.
All right, two things. I said this before, so it's not anything new, but the same problem that they had with the Star Trek Into Darkness, which is a rework of The Wrath of Khan. The problem that the movies have is they went too hard on Wolverine, and the whole point of the Dark Phoenix saga is it's the negative culmination, the tragic culmination of a love story that went on for almost 20 years at that point between Scott and Jean. Right. But because the movies and frankly the comics until recently, you idiots, you punked out Cyclops
completely
in favor of Wolverine, you destroyed massive drama points, massive sort of underpinnings of your story that make it something other than just random people in spandex beating up other people in spandex. So... to do the Dark Phoenix story without that component, and you can't have it because they didn't build it, there's no pathos there, is just a story of power corrupting. Okay, duh, snore. I've seen that. Don't care.
Yeah.
So it might be great effects-wise. I'm sure the actors are going to come and bring their A-game and all that.
I like Sophie Turner, the girl who plays
Sophie Turner. God bless her. She's great. That's, by the way, I'm betting on Sansa to win the game. It's going to be Sansa Stark. heard it here. It's all Sansa. Right. Sansa and Tyrion are going to run that shit. Watch. But they took out the thing that made it significant. Is that?
That's why I've always had a problem with the X-Men movies because I feel they always they undercast and underwrote Cyclops.
It's not their fault because at the time when the first X-Men movie was made, Marvel had spent almost a decade punking Cyclops out in favor of Wolverine.
I know.
Like, Wolverine sleeps with everybody. Wolverine's the best at everything. Even though when they first introduced him, Cyclops spanked that little punk motherfucker.
But those
it was a joke.
See, yeah, but see, the thing is that to me, I started reading comics. I remember getting, it was maybe 3 issues after Dark Phoenix, the saga ended.
That's when you started
reading.
Damn.
So with the Sidri Hunter.
Right, right.
Dave Cockran.
Right.
Paul Smith.
Right.
The best X-Men artist.
Paul Smith.
The best X-Men artist was going on. I was like, what is this story? I need to go back and read it. And it was such a more richer storyline. And then as they evolved Wolverine more, it became less interesting to me as a comic.
He's boring. He's just knives. That's all he is.
You know.
So hey, look, he's a villain. Like the Punisher. Mm-hmm. They made the Punisher show look great. The only version of the Punisher I've ever liked have been Punisher 2. Mm-hmm. Oh, the two Punisher movies I liked, and the Punisher show, because they did things with the character that the comics never did. Mm-hmm. And they also, in the show, he's broken. He's a broken human, literally a mentally broken human being. Mm-hmm. And in the movies, he's kind of the villain. Like, the people he's killing are also villains, mm-hmm. but he's a bad guy, right? In the comics, it's like there's this weird wish fulfillment that has been stoked and played upon in the fan base, mm-hmm. where he's getting to do that death wish thing, and I wish I could do that too. And I'm like, that's some toxic fucking shit.
Well, yeah, so that's why I think he's a popular character. I mean, to me, when the Punisher was just kind of like that little...
I don't know, is Chris talking more than 10?
I told him to stop talking.
My 10 words already.
Yeah, we steered him.
Go ahead, you're way past your limit
we
now.
We steered him. We dropped that in there.
The comic was cool when he was coming as the villain and pop up for an episode or two.
Yeah, he's a flavor.
You know, the we fought Daredevil was always really good. I think the best version of Punisher as a as a main hero was that like 5-issue thing that like Mike Zeck did when he went to prison.
Yeah,
that was the best. That was the best.
Yeah.
Then after that, it was just like, oh, you know what? Let's make him a star.
Flavor. He's a flavor. As soon like, as you make him a star,
he's not a star.
You're endorsing. Star.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so, you can't endorse him. He's he's a villain. He murders people.
It's a tough spot.
Like whatever.
The comic book franchise and the film franchises are kind of two different things.
Yeah,
same company, but we're talking.
So I'm hoping now that Marvel's absorbing the mutants that they will do their magic with them. I hope they start from zero. I hope they don't play like, don't even try to sort of assuage the feelings of people mm-hmm. who love the original franchises because they're there. You can go watch them over and over again if you want, but. I would assume, based on track record, they ain't going to do anything like what you've already seen.
They're bringing new actors. They're bringing everything new.
And I would leave mutants. Wolverine alone. I would start with the core group.
Well, they just
group.
Killed his ass, so I'm sure.
Start with a core group.
Right. Yeah, Angel,
the original X-Men, Beast, Angel, Beast, Marvel Iceman. Girl, Iceman, and Professor X. Right. I hate to tell you people, Magneto is an evil, racist, butcher son of a bitch. He is not your sensitive, mm-hmm. poor, broken little Magnus.
That's how they made him weak, too. They fucking softened him up in the last 10 years.
He is not your hero.
He's not good as a hero. He's good monster. As the ultimate villain.
He is a monster. And if he's not played like that, I'm kind of asleep. I'm asleep.
On that note, so let's jump into the show. Y'all know how we do it on Rant Room. We be going crazy up in here. Don't get them started on comics.
Yeah, that's a whole
a room
that's
full
a
of comic
week,
heads.
That's a
week. That's a whole another show, bitch. Yeah. That's a whole other show. So if you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get to the show.
Okay.
So Tracy, you brought up a cool little topic for us. We've been talking about doing this for a minute, but I think it's perfect time.
Yeah, appreciate it. So the Hollywood Reporter, March 1st, had an article sort of covering the WGA's meeting mm-hmm. with group of managers.
I was at the first one, yeah.
Okay.
A meeting with a large group of managers to discuss their proposed new terms for agents. Mm-hmm. And it was hard for me not to notice how this article was sort of framed. And, you know, Jeff was at the meeting.
Wait, I was at the membership meeting. The meeting with the manager.
Okay. Right. Okay.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. I think we were invited.
It's March 1st. Hollywood Reporter, Jonathan Handel is the writer. And just to frame it for everyone, the headline is as follows. Writers Guild stumbles as it attempts to enlist managers in fight against agents. And, you know, I printed it for everyone. You can see, you look it up. There's a picture of the Guild building, mm-hmm. okay, which suggests this powerful conglomerate. Okay, and, you know, I've been a...
a hammer on Hollywood.
I've been a publicist. I've been a journalist. And tell you guys kind of how the media works. I won't read the whole thing. We don't have time mm-hmm. for that.
It's all right.
But a couple of things that jumped out. It says that the crux of the dispute between the Guild and the agencies is the proposed new rules which would prohibit agencies from packaging films and television series, mm-hmm. thereby denying agencies what are sometimes extremely lucrative fees, and which would also prohibit affiliated production entities which the three biggest agencies have established in recent years. Right. Now, full disclosure, I am not a WGA bigwig, but obviously
none of us are lawyers.
Not an attorney.
Right. Not on any boards. Okay. Just workaday writers.
I did attend a committee meeting. I think Hillary was at the meeting where some members were reporting back to us what these discussions were like. And none of what I heard in that meeting suggested that the proposals would completely prohibit agencies from packaging films and TV. No. To my understanding, the proposals were going to the packaging process being a little bit more fair and equitable and kind of breaking the bread to include those of us who write the scripts that, you know, are the basis for these packages. And then the part about which would prohibit affiliated production entities, you know, goes to double dealing, like a production company and a studio, if they're in the same area, you know, this the idea of the proposal is to prevent their double dipping in that package.
Well, there's more.
It's not just double dipping for the this.
Well, let's explain it to the people who don't know what the hell's going on outside of the guild.
Okay, so first of all, packaging is this. Okay, for anyone who doesn't understand what packaging
please.
Is, an agency has a stable of, if it's big enough, let's say the big four agencies.
Right.
They have a bunch of actors that they represent, and they have a bunch of writers they represent, and they have a bunch of directors they represent, and in theory, they have a bunch of producers as well. Some of these things overlap. What they will do is if they'll get a project, they'll go to a studio and say, we will manage all of this for you. This is the entire package. This star, this director, this writer, this team of people. And the caveat is only our people will fill up the roles. Only our writers, only our other actors who aren't the star, and we get a cut.
Our directors, everything.
Only our directors, if it's a TV show. Mm-hmm. All of that, right? And we get a cut of residual revenue. Right?
No, it's not just residual revenue. They pointed this thing out that is called 3310, which is basically that and is that the agency will forego taking the commissions of all these people.
Right.
So
That's important.
All the creative people feel like I don't have to pay that 10% pimp fee.
Right.
But the 3310 is they get 3% of the budget of every episode.
Yep.
They get 3% of the licensing fee of the whole series.
Yep.
They get 10% of all profits ahead of everybody else on the stream.
Off the top.
The profits off of everybody and
gross profits, not net.
Gross profits. And what we know now, since this has been the case for the last 5 years, every show that is given the green light is already profit. They don't even have to sell any. They only green light shows that are already in the black. They're already getting money before it even airs. I'm just saying, the show is profitable before it airs.
Before we get to any of the other minutiae, this alone is a conflict of interest. The agent's job, the way that they make that 10% that they were talking about, we get paid, they get a 10% cut for helping to facilitate us getting a job.
Right.
What Chris has just described is they're getting money from the studio directly, which places them, and they get more money from the studio than they get from their client, their individual client.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the equity of the agency is no longer with the client, but with the studio.
Correct.
So one can see how the organization managed that is the union of those clients would have a small problem with that.
Now, to the article, and I'm not disparaging, you know, the truth of the veracity of the article, but the point of the article was to say that in this meeting with managers trying the guild's attempt to gather support, because many of the questions that the managers had, the managers were not satisfied with the answers, and there were all these anonymous sources, and managers won't say their names.
Sure.
Who had a lot to say about the WGA being either unable or unwilling to answer these questions. And I saw this, you know, I knew Hilliard was good enough to have me on the show today. And I'm thinking, okay, it's the Hollywood Reporter. So their ad revenue is driven by studios, the agents. Like, we're not the ones who are kind of buttering their bread.
Mm-hmm.
But when they have these articles in the business section, and I think this Jonathan Handel has covered the labor negotiations before, it seems to me they never miss an opportunity to kind of present us as the villains or the agitators, like we're the cause of the problem, as and you know, like we're
like we should be satisfied already.
But you know, they can't come out and say that
because it's not true.
It's very, but it's very subtle. It's nuanced.
Yeah.
So the dispute, the discussion is like the WGA's battling against battle, and it's a war. And we stumbled, and then all these anonymous people said it was a disaster, and they couldn't answer our questions. And it's like
horseshit,
right? So for you newbies out there, one, this is why it's important to have outlets like the Rant Room, because you learn, like a lot of folks in the business don't care about writers except for other writers,
which is odd considering all of your other jobs depend entirely on us.
Right.
But that's why there's this high degree of fucking animosity that is inherent in the business, because everyone knows they can't even get the fuck out of bed and put and brush their teeth
every time
until the writer
I read these articles about people coming up with computers that think they can do our job. Good luck trying to come up with that.
Yeah,
it'll never work.
It'll never happen. You know, it's cool for me to have Jeff here because we can benefit from his sort of firsthand. But the last thing, like a perfect example. So, and this may not be true. I don't have the details of it. I learned recently though, SAG, like if you're an actor and you perform on a Netflix series, okay, your residuals for the streaming of that series are zero.
Okay. No residuals.
Zero.
No residuals.
Now, I haven't seen anything in the business section of the trades about that, but everything that we try to do just to ask for and propose what's fair, it's a battle, it's a war. We're the ones instigating the
problem.
We're
overreaching.
Like we're upsetting the apple cart somehow.
Well, that's how the plantation works.
But see,
keep the slaves under your boot.
Well, thank you, because I didn't think it was just me. I don't think I'm tripping.
No, but see.
But let me take it to my dudes. And,
okay, so two things about this. Like, one, this guy who's covering labor, he probably was upset when 2 years ago that the Writers Guild was they got that 95% or maybe 100% you know strike authorization because the last time the industry went on strike in 2008 it kind of crippled the city
07.
In a sense, or 07, 08.
That's right.
It kind of crippled the city, and it was because of the writers.
It didn't help me.
And you know, I just squeaked in.
Yeah, right. I'm sorry to cut you off, but it's probably the same person who's doing the coverage, but the tone was the same around strike authorization. We want a strike.
Everybody wants a strike. Nobody ever.
If you take that back, I want a strike to get my shit.
That's what I'm saying. That's a means to an end.
If you know anything about labor,
a strike is a hammer.
Right.
Nobody brings the hammer to the first negotiation.
Right. If you don't have any other leverage,
right,
that is the reason for doing it.
It's a final result.
We will no longer work under these conditions. You don't think we're serious? Watch us step away from our typewriters.
Because the thing that people, this is where the debate, this is where the coverage is not being clear. It was never clear in all the shit I read during the strike authorization shit, all the shit. The business, regardless of what the fuck everyone is saying, is making shitloads of money in ways they never have in the history of the game.
That's correct. That's why the WGA was successful.
They
got the data. That's their real problem. We got the data. You can't argue with the numbers.
This whole concept about, well, you writers are getting paid, blah, blah, blah. This is not anything I've read. Writers' salaries have dropped 23% in the last three years.
That is correct.
23%. Why are motherfuckers like Les Moonves we're getting $60 million a year himself personally. He was $60 million a year. He was claiming at the last negotiation that the WGA needed to cut $60 million out of his pension and health for the entire union.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's his fee. That's his salary. Doesn't include his kickbacks and his startups and like that. So that's where the bullshit is. This kind of thing, it's like, you guys don't make enough money, or be happy with the shit we're giving you.
Which is what Jeff was just saying.
No.
Look, there's a business model that describes what we're describing. It's an illegal business model. It's a relationship between pimps and streetwalkers. Everybody laughs, and I said that at the meeting, and everybody laughed then. I'm not fucking laughing, okay?
It's real.
This is pimp behavior, and the difference is we're not streetwalkers. This is not an illegal activity where people can't
run. We gotta put our clothes back on?
Right, stop it. we have a recourse.
What's my condom?
The recourse is simply to demand an equitable treatment.
They don't lose money. Oh, and here's something else they said at the fucking meeting that these people aren't even saying. And it's not speaking out of turn because the meeting was a few weeks ago. People didn't know this. They make producers pay a retainer. This is for movies. Mm-hmm. They make them pay a retainer to have access to any of the clients that are on that are at the agencies. What the fuck bullshit is that?
Yep.
That is perhaps why movies have sucked for so long because people cannot put together the movie that they want to.
The core issue is very simple. And everybody's mad and they have a right to be mad. All of the emotional stuff is fine. And I agree with all of it. Rants, throw things, be mad. But here's the bottom line. An agent's function is tied to my success as a writer. As soon as it is decoupled from my success as a writer and attached only to the success of the studio, it is a conflict of my interest in being represented by that group because they do not represent me. They represent themselves and they represent the studio. So unless we can have a relationship with our representatives in which they actually represent us, and it makes perfect sense for their salaries to be tied to our salaries, that means I don't have to trust you. I don't have to like you. You don't make money unless I make money.
Right.
Then I can trust that you're going to go out and be my advocate.
Yeah,
the instant you're making more money from the person who's trying to also pay me less money for my services, right. It makes no sense to believe that you would do anything but work in the favor of that other group.
Well, let me give you an example. So one of my friends posted something on Facebook the other day. She's a high-level writer. She talked about when she first came in, she got staffed on a show, and she just happened to sign with a big agency, right? One of the top four. They negotiated her first season, two scripts, as a staff writer.
Okay.
Right? On a show that they were...
That's muscle.
That packaging. They were packaging, though. Let's get to the deal, right? Second year, they move her up to... executive story editor, right? ESE.
Mm-hmm.
Not story editor, it's executive story editor.
Right.
And then, so she got that jump. Next season, they were about to negotiate, and the agent who moved themselves up, because they were a junior agent, worked themselves up. And so they were like, well, great. Well, next year, we're going to try to get you as, you know, producer or whatever. Boom. The agents came in and told them, no, you can't negotiate against us. It's our show. So that she had to stay right there where she was.
It is an inherent conflict of interest.
See what I'm saying?
Interest is not with the client.
I just wanted to give everybody an example of how
that is
it works.
Well, see, exactly.
When you're in the midst of it.
Yeah. Now, the thing is that Jeff is saying is that to be an agent as opposed to a manager, in California, you got to get, there's like some, you got to get bonded or something like this. And part of that is being a fiduciary. Dude, the thing that this is akin to would be in the stock market where, you know, and this causes the whole problem with the fucking the bubble in 2008 is that places like Goldman Sachs and everything like that, they were taking money and not caring about the risk.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying, we're going to get paid if
regardless.
I don't care if the country burns in flames. Mm-hmm. I'm still getting paid.
Also, we should jump in and say this isn't all agencies, right? We're talking about these massive ones,
the
top
the only
four
ones that
agencies that are forming their own production companies.
The thing is, it goes back to Mike. This is where I put the Karl Marx hat back on, is that they're all being owned, or they got portions of their ownership has been given to
hedge funds
and stuff like that, which means they got to answer to this kind of money. And when you get an answer to money, you put your, you know, what you do is that you put on spiked boots as you step on the neck of these people, because that's how you got to play. You cannot let the labor get anything.
Right.
It's just inherent in our country to make labor feel like bitches and treat them like
hoes.
Which
is why we have frickin' unions in the first place.
Because if you don't do that, then you end up with, you know, it's the problem.
Now, mind you, an article talks about this, like, Because it mentions, you know, state law prevents managers from procuring employment in that way.
Yes. Have you ever seen a manager who didn't negotiate some
agencies? I will not comment on the activities of a manager.
The whole gist was the managers asking questions and having legitimate concerns mm-hmm. and not being satisfied with how the guild answered the questions or the fact that the guild didn't answer certain questions. Mm-hmm. But everything we just laid out is like they ignore that completely. It's just about
we're trying to get
managers together for our war against these agencies, and the managers aren't coming along.
Well, my understanding at the membership meeting, because this was discussed, someone asked, "What about my manager versus my agent?" Right, right, blah blah blah. And the leadership was basically, we don't have a beef with managers. Managers automatically, because of the nature of their relationship to us, they have a way harder time doing any of the crap that these four or five agencies are doing, even if they were inclined to do so. Also, it's built in. The career track of a manager is ultimately to become a producer on a certain level, right. Maybe, especially if their client blows up.
Right. So another fact that's left out.
Right. It feeds the manager to have the client blow up mm-hmm. because if my career track leads me to be a producer, the odds are high I'm going to be a producer within the organization that's formed around my client. Right. Right? So again, it still circles back to that original client
representative. Also be a conflict of interest. Because say you get a show, say you created a show.
Yeah.
Your manager helps you sell the show.
Yes.
So they come on as producer.
But they stop being a manager at that point.
Hear me out. They come on as producer.
Yes.
You get fired and they're still producer.
Theoretically, that could happen.
Theoretically, it could happen.
But at that point, that producer, now producer, has no longer been a manager. They have to stop being a manager at that point.
And they're not taking your money.
They're not taking a cut of any of your... They're earning their money as a producer.
Okay. See, that's the thing, right. Too, they don't mention is that in the article is that, you know, they asked... They did a survey about how many... Who was the last... What was the last time your agent actually got you a job? And it was like,
I'm so not used to hearing anybody. Everybody I talked to got their job because your boy, your girl, somebody referred you.
That I didn't get me.
You know? So they said at the meeting that like 75% of the respondents said they got their own jobs. Yeah, not from the people.
I believe that.
Yet they got to pay this thing, you know, and people think it's this 10% tax, but it's from there's really the 25% tax that most people have to pay, and that's because you had to pay 10% to your agent who didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. You had to pay 10% to your manager who probably did something, helped you with the.
They probably did more than your agent.
And on top of that,
I will not comment on the activities of managers.
I just meant that since I'm way more closer to my manager than my agent.
That's generally the case.
What's crazy is even though you're. The agent is in position by state law to negotiate deals.
Right.
You still got to have an attorney to negotiate your deal at 5%. Right. So it's 25%.
Well, unless you're at one of the big houses, in which case they have their in-house counsel.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people I know who are at like the big houses and still have their own agents.
Sure.
Still have their own attorneys because they need something different. There has to be some.
They have to make sure somebody's looking out for them.
But that is the bottom line of all of this. This is your team. Right. That's what the agent sells you. That's why packaging is attractive to a baby writer, mm-hmm. right? And that's how they remember. I'm old, so mm-hmm. I remember when packaging started, and it was also for actors. It was sold to actors for the same reason. Yeah. It makes it sound great. We've got Tom Hanks. He's going to be in all these movies. You're going to be with us. So if there's a role in the movie, it's always going to be our clients who are not only first in line, only in some cases, the only people in line. So you're going to get a better leg up on your career. Come be with us. Right? Sounds great. In the moment, maybe it is great for a first couple of movies, but at a certain point, you realize that was just volley one. Right. That was just the opening move of the chess game. The second move is, well, I'm going to make these deals with the studios. I'm going to start my own little studio, and now my clients become my stable within mm-hmm. that, and all of a sudden, you're back to the old studio system,
right.
Which is what we all fucking hated and why we have it the way it is now.
True.
Okay? Baby writers, again, don't know their history of their industry, so they're perfectly
Chisani.
Cool. Some of them are perfectly cool with this. Like, we saw people at the meeting stand up and say, well, this seems fine to me. I'm good with all this, whatever. I don't want to rock this.
Yeah, you don't rock the boat. Well, see,
you're thinking short term.
Yeah, and they're like, I'm working. What's the problem?
And you're thinking weak, which is what the bottom line is they depend upon. They're thinking of just you in this ocean. Right. That's why you have the union. You're not just you. This is not just happening
to you. You don't have your minimum because of you.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the minimum is not because of your agent. Right. And the residuals you're getting is not because of you and your agents, because what the collective people decided to sacrifice, and guess what? You're just being a selfish bitch or a selfish asshole if you're saying, oh, what about me? What happens when you're not working? Yeah, right. Or if you're not working,
everything you get, residuals, health care, all of that stuff is based on a group of us saying, nope, this is what's going to happen, or there's no work getting done.
You know, and to me, the thing that people aren't even really getting is that if you're pulling 3% off of the budget of every episode, so let's just say that that's maybe $100,000, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe. That's what some of them are saying.
You would say most shows are about 5 to 8 million or something like that.
So, okay, so it's about $100,000, a little more.
That's a writer I can't pay.
That's a couple of writers you can't pay.
That's not on my screen.
Exactly. It's a couple
that's
of writers.
That's an effect I can't buy. Yeah. That's music I can't get the rights to. That's a billion things that go into the actual making of the thing. And what did you do but negotiate a contract?
Let's just be clear. That's a week.
Yeah. That's right.
A week.
And if we are talking profit.
Right.
Again,
and you're in there for months.
And I'm telling you, no matter what the budget of your show is, it's not enough.
Right.
Literally, whatever the budget of your show is, however big it is,
$15 million, whatever it is. No, they want 20. They really want 20.
Right.
They're getting paid like they're top of the call sheet or some shit.
And you know, the writer who wrote the script generated this profit
and is running the thing.
Right. Shouldn't expect any participation in the profit because we're already like
Now that's okay if your name is Toby because that means you're a fucking slave.
That's exactly
and that's the way they want to play you.
My question to you is, and again, divorcing rhetoric and emotion from this, exactly how am I meant to trust you as my advocate when you're making more money earlier and more consistently from a project that I developed to sell to this third entity? The third entity is not the enemy, by the way. The studio is just doing what studios do.
That's right.
They're trying to negotiate the best deal, which is what my agent's meant to be doing for me, not for themselves. All of these things, the forming of their own production companies, this packaging stuff,
the 3310.
All of that is in aid of making the company more money and servicing the company. But that is not the fiduciary relationship that you get when you have an agent. Right. That's not what you signed up for with the state government. That is not the pitch that you make to me when you bring me on as a client. Mm-hmm. So either tell me the truth up front and let me not be with you and go to one of the smaller agencies that doesn't work this way, or stop doing this.
But at the same time, people might think the studios are in cahoots. The studios are not.
They don't care one way or the other.
But the studios see this as an extortion fee. They got to pay because they're taking that.
This is mob shit.
Because basically
you can't have Tom Hanks unless.
And it's a thing where it's like, and they're taking 10% off the top. This is before advertising fees. This is before they're paying interest. This is before they're paying anybody. They're getting that 10%. So it's this, you know, it's the pimp. Thing, like you've been saying all along.
They're fucking pimps.
I want that
and
money.
I'm going to say that.
The damn
every
minute
time.
The dick comes out, I want some money.
That's right.
Thanks.
And
thanks.
There are plenty of. There are, by the way, the vast majority of agencies are neither in the place where they could even contemplate doing this. Mm-hmm. And I like to think not inclined to try it.
That's right.
Okay.
I'm already hearing about people leaving the big agencies to go to a medium boutique agency.
Look, if you want to be a studio, be a freaking studio. Right. Seriously, if that's you've got your company to the point where it's got enough juice and enough money and you got enough connections, stop being an agency and just be one more studio. Yeah. That's perfectly legit.
Double and triple dipping.
Don't be fucking Louis B. Mayer again because that's
we're
just
not having
you
that.
Dick.
It's just not having. We're not having.
But
that.
The other thing for the newbies is this goes to the importance of your material. You still have a lot of this is beyond your control.
Right.
And getting your material to where it needs to be is not just about your own well-being and the craft and all that. Like, that's all important, but that's ultimately, there's not too much you really control in the early stages, especially, you know, at this point.
Let me ask you something. Go ahead.
This is the thing that I think is so crazy about this is that, you know, like, I look at it as like, the reason why people, myself included, have had a difficulty in trying to get an agent, getting a manager is a different stuff. Getting an agent in the West 5 years, just 5 to 10 years is because they do not want to cultivate a client's career. They say to themselves, yep, if your material is not good enough to trigger a $100 million spend, then I don't want you. And I think a lot of people, especially particularly when you're young, you may not know how to create a project that is, mm-hmm, that could trigger the $100 million thing. And this whole concept about what's your voice, that whole thing that people say, I want your voice, blah, blah, blah. That's kind of a, like, that then becomes questionable, because if you have a really unique voice that's amazing, that would fit great on someone's show, it might not be good enough to trigger the $100 million spend. You're not going to be at CAA.
The only reason it works is if your model is only, I need to make as much money as I can in any way I can. If it's about making good product, none of that shit makes any sense. Right. None of this structuring makes any sense.
It's not good use of time,
right,
in that paradigm.
It's just a cash grab. Right. And it's the easiest, biggest cash grab from the most vulnerable group, because the personality of writers, as we know, for the most part, most aren't built like me, right? They're just not aggressive. They generally want everybody just get along with everybody, mm-hmm, just trying to tell my little stories and get paid and live a little decent life. That's most writers, right? Mm-hmm. And the other guys depend on that. They depend on your willingness to sort of see the other side, like, well, you got to see it for... No, you don't. This is naked thievery. This is nakedly reaching into your pocket. This is nakedly putting a chain around your neck,
right,
okay? These are two groups colluding, even though one group is open about it. The studio is simply saying, we want to make X, we want to work with X, we are willing to pay X.
Right.
It's your agent, who's in theory your advocate, who's saying, if you wish to do that, you're going to have to pay a lot more in these other areas that do not go to my client, mm-hmm, ever.
Yeah, okay? Not a penny.
Not a penny goes to their client. Remember the relationship. Mm-hmm. They are technically your employee, right? They work for you. That's the fiduciary relationship.
Let me ask you a question. So for the listeners who are listening, how does this affect, say you're assigned to William Morris?
Right? Okay.
Let's just say it. Say you're signed to William, whoever the fuck, right?
Yes.
You're signed to one of the top agencies. Yeah. You have been in the past.
I have been in the top agencies.
You're signed to one of the top agencies, yeah, right? Just general. This is for you, any of you. What happens when we all agree to walk away? How does it affect?
Away.
Let's just ask. For the people who are listening, how does it affect? Let's step by step.
Okay,
how does
it's not
it affect?
A work stoppage. In this case, the strike that people are talking about, or this war or whatever, it's not a work stoppage.
Okay.
It's going to be a code of conduct that says you don't do certain things. We're going to assign this.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're going to withhold funds because you're no
so
longer
So it's not going to be like, I'm leaving
right,
my
the
agency
studio's
type
not
of shit.
Getting hurt.
Right.
Wait.
Okay.
Studio doesn't get hurt. You have your show on the air. Mm-hmm. Jeff's Giant Space Epic.
Right.
Let's call it Jeff's Giant
That's
Space
a hit.
Epic. Is, I know it's an automatic hit, right? That stays on the air. Everybody continues to go to right. work. What happens after you don't agree to the code of conduct is the money that the studio is paying me that, you know, you usually let it funnel through your agency mm-hmm. and they take their cut and then they send you a check or whatever, they don't get it. They become removed from that process.
Hmm.
The check comes directly to me from the studio, and I cut you a check after you sign the code of conduct.
Hmm.
And then you adhere to the code of conduct. If you do not, I'll tip my little black ass over to a slightly smaller agency who will be very happy to behave decently towards their clients, hmm. make them a little bigger with this influx of new writers.
It's going right? to happen.
Again, the studio ain't going to get hurt by any of this. Right. The network's not going to get hurt by any of this.
And the consumer who's concerned is not going right. to worry about it.
That's why I'm asking, because all the writers are asking me, Hillard, how does that affect us? Like, what are we going to do?
It doesn't affect you in the day-to-day. And ultimately, here's the other thing. The studio should be on your side with this because mm-hmm. there's no work stoppage and there's no money stoppage.
Right.
Okay. I lost my train of thought. I'll think of it in a minute.
Well, but the other thing, last thing about the piece, to Jeff's point, it implies that because it's coming up on traditional TV staffing season, you know, there's this threat of this that's going to disrupt everyone's ability, as if staffing season were the same thing that it's always been.
Right, which it is not.
Okay, so two things about this article where this guy is a fuck. What do you call him? The dickheads? What were you saying?
Oh, that's the other people. I don't know how to describe this.
No, he falls in the same boat. This is the situation. One, we just said 75% of people who get jobs get them outside of the agency situation.
True.
So that just means that 75% of the broadcast staff, because that's what we're talking about, which is a very narrow set of there's not that many shows on broadcast, so that's a very small amount of people. There's a lot of money in there, but there's a very small amount of people. So it's just 25% of those slots are being filled by the agent. Hmm. So the other 75% are, I know the showrunner, I know a co-EP, mm-hmm. I know some people at the studio, I know some people at the network.
You're hustling your career.
I'm hustling my ass off. Mm-hmm. I'm doing all the shit that 10 years ago the agent would have been doing. So it's not going to affect that at all. And since there's so much fucking, there's so much shit going on year round to fill the streaming platform need for material, staffing season is always.
Yeah, and as I understand it, I want to stress this. As I understood it, and I hope I'm not wrong, because this is something I very much am behind, there's no work stoppage, right? This is not a strike. So anyone who's talking about in those terms is full of it.
That's what I mean.
Also, I want to...
Shouldn't cause a crash.
There's no strike or a crash, none of that stuff. The other thing is, and I want to stress this too, the job of an agent is a hard one. Mm-hmm. The job of a manager is a hard one. There are stacks of people actually doing this job in this town. There are agencies that just do the real agent job. Right. We're talking about four or five gigantic corporations that have suddenly tried to change the game in this way that is frankly shitty.
Right. Okay. That's a lot of them are former lawyers.
Yeah,
and
but
they know how to work those.
Problem for them is that a lot of us are also former lawyers.
True that.
Okay, and this time around, not even this time around, I'm just saying this can't be painted in a light where it's the writers versus the concept of agenting or the concept of management, which I think is what you're getting at with this article. That isn't what's up. What's up is simply fair payment for fair work and not lying to us about our relationship and our fiduciary relationship. Fiduciary means a money exchange relationship. Right. You agree to do X, I agree to do X.
And I mean to protect you in good faith.
Good faith. And it's very clear that good faith is only happening from one side, our side. If you can't operate in good faith, there are literally scores of other agencies that will be happy to take my business and work with me in a good faith
because
way.
Because that's the thing. The top four agencies should no longer be called agencies. They are, it's back to our discussion about the Netflix thing. They are clinging to an old title.
In order to do a new thing.
To do something new. And they're saying, don't break that title that allows us to rob from you in a way. I mean, it's like this person got up and said, who is a former business affairs exec at William Morris, got up and spoke at one of the meetings.
And
we had this discussion about, hey, and started there and was told by the person, here's how you got to do your deals. And they said, but that puts us against the Writers Guild. Mm-hmm. And the senior business affairs person at the agency said, the Writers Guild hasn't figured this out yet. So here's the thing.
Totally believe it.
Here's the thing. We figured out. The one thing that I feel that people have called me, some black writers have called me and asked me about the thing. This is the thing that I think people need to understand. It's that agents are skilled manipulators. They're going to talk to you in terms that will be alarmist.
They're salesmen,
yes. That will alarm. I mean, think about it. When you go into a big agency, they know how to put on this show.
They're pimps.
Oh, shit, I need to be here.
Mm-hmm. I told you about my experience.
Yeah. Oh, I need to be here. Oh, shit, and it's all this. They're taking out to lunch, and we're going to go to Mastro's and have all the steak and shit. I want this life. Mm-hmm. What happens when they turn that power against you? They will do that. And because, as Jeff said, that writers are inherently more empathetic and therefore more, quote unquote, gullible to emotional.
They're more retiring. They're less aggressive. The job of an actor is just simply much more the spear point. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was one. That's part of why I am the way I am now. Mm-hmm. It's just a faster, harder, more brutal sort of way of being in this industry. As a result,
because we have to deal with rejection
constantly.
Immediately.
Whereas writers, it's just softer. It just is the nature of the way we get work. It's all softer.
So people depend on that. And the people and they will take advantage of that because writers are the ones who are just like actors are thirsting for approval from everyone else, and you know, just all this kind of bullshit that is like, yes, and that's what actually makes you a good writer. But you have to realize they're going to use the knives around.
The people who made up the scheme that's fucking you are the people across the table. So whatever they seem like, however soft they may seem, however nice they may seem, however reasonable they may seem, remember, they're the guys who came up with this scheme that literally fucks you, okay? So whatever they're saying in the moment, understand when they go away, they're not weak. They're not soft. They're not stupid. They're not your friends. They're none of those things.
Right, but they know how to talk.
Oh, they do know how to talk.
Oh, and here's something else that you people got to realize about Asians. They don't really like writers and stuff because the Writers Guild sets something up where the agents don't get a cut of your residual. And also the agents never lift a finger during the negotiations with the producers and studios to help us out. Hmm. They never do, and they always can, but they never fucking do. So they're not your friend. They're only out to rob you. I mean,
we have to keep stressing. This is not all agents. There are good agents and bad agents.
But see, now I had this conversation with someone one time the other day, and I was trying to say that.
Yeah, I want to prep and say I happen to like my agent. Yeah, but
shout out to my manager.
See, this is the thing about it.
And my manager.
You got to say to yourself, what is the gratification that comes from work being done? And work being on the air is that the writer, the actor, the director, the costume person, you get gratification when your project goes and when you see it air. Agents get their gratification when the deal closes. Hmm. So all they worry about is closing deals. And if they can find ways to make deals bigger for them that are at your expense, that's more exciting to them than
more exciting to a certain kind of agent.
But
again, the relationship could be awesome.
It can be awesome.
Agents from the time they enter the business to the time one of you dies.
You hear about it all the time.
Right? But where you don't never need a manager because the agent is so good. It's so hardcore.
That's true.
Jeff Melvoin went for years until last year. He never had a manager his entire life until last year.
What you have is a group of companies that think of, and it's not illogical for them to have come to this position. They have so many clients that they think of the clients as their employees rather than you are our employee. Even though I'm small and Tom Hanks, I keep saying Tom Hanks. I love you, Tom Hanks. but even though Tom Hanks is huge and I'm tiny, you still work for me. When I'm in the office with you, I'm your freaking client. Mm-hmm. But it's difficult to get that across to somebody who's got their own Learjet and hangs out, you know, flies off with Will Smith to Florida, chill, right? Who's this motherfucker? I don't know. What's your name? When did you join the agency? You know what? Better to be at a smaller agency, frankly. Better to be somewhere where they're going to treat you straight, even if they don't have the muscle, quote unquote. And you also have to really start thinking about your career of, they got muscle. Is that muscle being used on my behalf?
Right. Is it being used against me? It's being used against you right now.
In this case, it's being used against a great many people, right? There's a lot of...
Here's a question for you, Dylan. Yeah. So for a young writer who's about to get on their first show, say they're with one of the top four or five. How do they know that their company, that their agency even is packaging this?
Well, if you're on a show, and I think I was on one, and I don't want to name which one, but I was on a show where I was the one person who wasn't packaged in, and the showrunners had to tell the agency, bite me, we want this guy.
Really?
Okay. That is a hard thing, right? That's bucking a system. That's a fee. That's a part of a fee that agency is not going to get. Mm-hmm. So you have to, that showrunner has to really want you to buck that system. Right?
But how does a writer know that they're even involved in that?
They don't know.
You don't.
They
wouldn't know. You don't know. But you will know. I knew in the room because people mentioned their agencies and it sort of came up, oh, wait, everyone but me is at this one agency.
Oh, right.
Okay.
You had sense enough to investigate. You were paying attention.
Right. But
and then you have that thing where the first week, all of a sudden, all the gifts start coming in, and you realize it's like, where my agent is.
So your question, like, how do you know? Because no one's.
But ultimately, it doesn't really matter. Right. It really doesn't matter if you got packaged in or not, right? You at that level of the business, your entry point. Get in how you get in.
Get in how you get in.
Right. So if you got in because of a package, you got in because you're Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, and your dad runs the company. Great.
But you know what? There's an interesting line here that ends this article that I think is interesting to look at. It's a question that came up. If the studio stops paying packaging fees, how did the guild know that this money would come back to writers and be enough to offset the 10% commission the writer would have to pay in the absence of the packaging fee?
That's crap. That's crap bullshit. In the room. It doesn't matter.
Here's the thing. You signed. Look.
That's the deal. 10%. That's the freaking deal. The package is sort of like a weird, like, you don't have to do the deal.
Right.
You have to do the deal. Just like they have to do the deal. You whiny, greedy, selfish motherfuckers. You have to do the actual deal.
You got to put a 10%. This is the thing. The thing is that he's saying the offset the 10% fee. So if we all have to pay our 10% fee, okay, guess what? We could actually be negotiating a higher amount of our salary, because $100,000 a week, mm-hmm. if they're taking out every episode, like I said, that's not the writing staff. That could be a whole nother writing staff.
I'm going to say it to you like this.
So what's happening is, that's why staffs are smaller.
Exactly.
Partly, that is why staffs are smaller.
But that 10% fee, make more money. Right? It's an incentive. It incentivizes your agent to go in hard, to negotiate for you. Okay, so you're only making 50K this time. Right. So they only get five. Okay, right? Well, who's got an incentive to get your ass 100K next time? Mm-hmm. The agent whose job it is to get you 100K next time.
And that's for the whole year, and not your job episode.
Is to be good enough to warrant the agent going in.
This is how you start to get a quote.
Right. And then the agent goes in and says, look, Jeff was awesome. I don't know what Phil was doing, but Jeff was awesome. He needs 100K this year. Mm-hmm. And that agent needs to be strong enough, both in their job as an agent and with this particular client who actually has the material to say, you're right. Yeah. He needs to be paid more. He needs to be promoted, or she needs to be promoted. That's the nature of the job. That's our whole thing when we go into these rooms. Yeah. We have to do that. They also have to play their side. So this notion of, oh my God, I got to pay out 10%. That's the fucking deal.
What'd you say, Joyce? Well, I'm with Jeff 100%. But if you don't like the systemic 10%, whatever the percentage is, that's when you go back to the table and you continue to negotiate or renegotiate. Mm. These people, they get mad at the union for being a goddamn union.
You know, another question I get. You know, another question I get a lot from the younger writers is, how come, because a lot of people are actors and writers and, you know, different hyphenates. Mm-hmm. How come with my agent, they can negotiate to get, you know, my minimal plus 10%, but when I write a script or when I do whatever, they can't guarantee.
You can't? What do you mean they can't?
They don't.
Oh, really? How shocking.
You know what I mean?
You know what? Do your goddamn job.
Yeah. At the very least, you should be asking for
it. When I was an actor, I would walk into my agencies of different sizes, and you know what those places were doing? Fucking humming. Okay, people were on phones, yelling at people, slamming phones down, walking out of offices, getting that extra 5%, getting that extra $300 for a client that's playing office guard number 3 or some shit like that.
They weren't lazy.
Okay, they were doing their jobs. Writers have a cushier, easier job than any actor. Okay, and therefore the writer's agents have a cushier, easier job than any actor's agent does. Mm-hmm. All right. Your job is to get your ass on that phone and get me as much money as you can get me to do the job that I'm going to come in and play my A game. Mm-hmm. And if that means you negotiate scale plus 10 or salary plus 10%, then guess what? That doesn't come out of my pocket. That's the studio paying you that extra 10% that you negotiated because you're a fucking agent. Okay. It's not rocket science. Right. It's how the business used to work. It's how the business does work today, right now. All right? This is not magic. It's not some crazy shit that some weird-ass people made up in a back room. The people who made up some shit in the back room are the ones trying to change the game and fuck you. Okay? Secretly, with a smile.
Oh, because the thing, too, they were also saying is that, well, we don't get to see their books.
Right.
So we don't even know how much money is actually being made.
That's right.
You know, and so when these, like, when...
But you're my employee. They aren't your books.
Yeah.
They're not your books.
Right. And it's never an issue when other people are getting theirs.
Right.
Or renegotiating theirs or proposing to get more theirs. It's only an issue with us.
To me, it goes back to what you were saying earlier about your friend who, that woman or whatever, your friend who spoke and said, I'm on the, just lack of a better thing, the, like, I'm on the Endeavor content, you know, series. They get me two episodes. They get me the script fees for two first season, where a staff writer, where they probably set it up in a way where they're not even like, you know, they're actually getting that money. It's not being charged against their salary either, right, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But then they're going to, like, you know, lock your career in. They're going to put that roadblock on the career for you right there.
Yeah, the house niggas get to wear fresh linens.
And then the thing is, and the thing is, then you really can't even go on another show, can you?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're packaging all the other shows. So I want to go to another show, mm-hmm, done by, say, ICM content. How do I get onto that show?
You, well, don't.
You can't.
Right.
Yeah, and they don't have the incentive.
And it goes back to the old studio system. Again, if you knew the history of your fucking industry, this would all be obvious to you people. It's very simply, okay, a consolidation of a weird kind of consolidation of power back to the way where it was Louis B. Mayer and his boys sitting around in a room with five guys,
people,
right,
deciding,
and some secretary
money
on their lap bringing them martinis. You think I'm joking? I'm fucking not. Okay. Deciding the fates of everyone else in the industry. Do you want that? There's a reason it doesn't exist and hasn't existed in our lifetimes.
And it's why the federal, okay, government came in and broke them up.
That's exactly right. There's something wrong with it. These guys are trying to go back to,
because
it.
Because it veers back to monopoly power.
How,
as
shocking.
I've been saying,
what an odd tendency for something run by a hedge fund to wish to do. Okay? Grow some spines. This is your fucking wallets. This is your fucking careers. Okay? Don't be little punks like this. Don't be slaves. Don't be hookers. If you're going to be a hooker, be a goddamn escort.
So let me ask you.
Okay? Seriously.
So say in the next, you know, whenever all this is all set up, how is this going to look for the writer step by step? So we agree as the Writers Guild that we're going to come together,
mm-hmm,
and you know, not allow this to happen. What's the next steps for the writers?
Well, I think we have muscle that people don't think we have. I think we've been, most writers have been conditioned to think of themselves as low man, low person on the totem pole. Mm-hmm. But as Chris has pointed out multiple times on multiple shows, this shit don't happen without us.
Right.
So simply saying, look, if this is all about your money pipeline, we're going to withhold that from you, but continue to work for the company that hired us, mm-hmm, Sony or whoever, that's muscle.
Mm-hmm.
What it will look like physically is, I'm guessing there will be some sort of easy to sign or not sign document, okay, that will be legally binding to each agency.
So when you're doing your contract, this is in the contract.
No. See, because essentially the guild has a contract with the agency,
right?
Mm-hmm. Or that's a blanket one that they all have to sign and respect. So what would happen is they would all have to just abide by this code of conduct, which would make them behave the way they're supposed to behave, not to behave in some way that's making them twist, mm-hmm, their arm or something.
So if you
like
want to have this company, there'll be
consequences.
The consequences, withholding of cash, it sounds like to me, is the simplest thing. You won't get your fees. Right. And there's simply, yeah, you can hold on to your giant clients because maybe they don't need agents anyway, and I don't know what they are even with you for anyway at this point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I guess there'll be some giant millionaire clients that don't care,
right,
I guess.
Right.
But that's not where your bread and butter is, and you're about to feel it, right? The people who are just workaday, I'm mid-level, I'm low-level, I'm part of the union, therefore I'm withholding my money. That's going to hurt your bottom line.
Okay, so there's two things about that, about these millionaire writers, about the money.
I don't know they're automatically bad. I'm just saying some of them are.
But the first time I heard about this packaging fee debate was about 3 years ago. What's his name? Greenblatt from Greenblatt Giannullari. Mm-hmm. He was talking about this on that show, The Business, one time. He was like, "Why this is killing the shows?" Mm-hmm. And then a flip side is it just like, you know, the people getting robbed all the time. I mean, there's that lawsuit they just got. There was an arbitration the other day
with
Fox and Bones, where Fox withheld $127 million in profit from the two stars and the creator of Bones. And there's a similar lawsuit going on with the people at AMC with what's going on with The Walking Dead.
Right.
The money is always there. The industry is awash in money. And the fact that writers' salaries have gone down,
is
really disgusting. Foul. It's just foul. Yeah.
But we have means of production are in our hands. Right?
It's true. It's true.
Means of production are in our hands. We're the oil they're fucking drilling.
Right.
Okay? Yeah. People don't like people to say that out loud. Tough shit.
It's the truth.
Try and make some shit without us. try and make some shit without us. Mm-hmm. Right? I know you're working on your
little, some great shit without
us. Trying to, I know you're trying to work on those computer apps that will duplicate what writers can do.
That'll never happen.
I know you think that your little friend that is coming out of high school can slide into this slot if we ever were to go on strike. Yeah, try it. Mm-hmm. Try it. You saw what happened the last time.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. But reality. I mean, and people don't even realize that reality shows are written. Mm-hmm. So
from the point of view of the writer, too, I really need to stress this, guys. All of this depends on the fact that you think less of yourself than you should.
Hmm.
Okay. I'm not saying be some egomaniac running in there with swords blazing, right, guns blazing and all that. I'm saying own the fact that you're an expert at something and people are paying for your expertise.
That's right.
And they should treat you fairly within the law. That's all that's being discussed.
Exactly.
No one's talking about going to parties or who gets to sleep with who or who's hot or who, any of that stuff. I do a service at a particular level. If I was a surgeon, mm-hmm, nobody would be having this discussion.
Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be a question.
It wouldn't even be a question. Mm-hmm. Well, I operate at the level of a fucking brain surgeon, and I expect to be paid and treated accordingly. And so should you. And so should they expect that. The agents should expect that, too, from us. This weird shaking up of the deck, it's just awful.
It's
like just straight up awful. It doesn't serve anyone. Even the industry as a whole, it doesn't serve anyone. So stop it. Mm-hmm. Or we'll make you stop it.
And Chris had another good point before, too. Like a lot of these other writers and people who cover it, like they can't do what we do, but they would already be doing it. Like a lot of critics. Like, it's like we can do what they do, but many of them can't do what we do. And so that comes out very often in their work.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. The tone and the whole thing.
This is one of those subjects that reminds me of, Chris, I was telling you, I think we talked about it on the podcast too, about how when they do the new membership thing, they never have any of us who represent, you know, the committees there.
So I fought it. Yeah.
So I brought it up at our last big town hall that I helped them put together. So they invited me.
Oh, ha, ha.
But they didn't put me up on the fucking stage. They just had me standing there, you know, in the lobby, like passing out pamphlets. And I'm like, no, this is ridiculous. And then they got, what's his name, Billy Ray and all them up on the stage. I'm like, they have something to say because they have the experience, right? But they're not in the trenches like we are.
Right.
They need one of us up there. It don't have to be me. I'm just generalizing. You know, they need somebody, hopefully a person of color, by the way, you know, to be up there showing the kids what's going on now.
Right.
He's a fucking multimillionaire. He doesn't live in our world at all.
That's what I say, too. There's a lot of these conversations. I'm too far away from street level now in my career to have anything meaningful to contribute. But these issues that we're talking about
are
top bottom across the board. But yeah, there is this aspect of there is a disconnect between people who've been doing it, who started doing it before things sort of shifted.
Yeah.
And people are getting in now, having to make different kinds of decisions. That is something that the union needs to address, that needs to be within, that dialogue within the union needs to be much more robust.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Right.
And again, that's what's hot about this podcast.
Ah.
Not just because Hilliard's my friend. And there are other outlets that do a good job and kind of rep writers. Some of them were smart enough to have Hilliard and Lisa and Chris co-host there, but everybody loves the superstar, right? Everybody loves the person who's got the hit show or the hit film or the number one box office. So, you know, it's really a good thing that we can kind of say what needs to be said at times here. And, you know,
I should say this too. I personally have two managers and a lawyer.
Two managers?
Two managers.
Two separate managers?
Two separate managers. One handles one kind of part of my career. The other one handles staffing. One handles development, basically.
Oh, interesting.
So I'm still paying the 25%.
I didn't even know you could do that. That's interesting.
It was an experiment. We're trying it.
Really?
Okay. Not for any particular reason. I don't have any antipathy towards agencies.
Right.
But when we're talking about what will happen to the agents, I'm not going to feel it one way or the other because I'm not going to have to deal with that conversation with an agent unless an agent picks me up and I say, do you adhere to the code of conduct? If you don't, I guess this conversation's over, right? But I've been in a business a long time. I've been in a game a long time. I was an actor for many years, a successful one. Mm-hmm. I was trying to get in the game.
You know what it's like to be a series regular. Yes.
I did this.
Right.
And I've been a successful writer for less time, but a while.
Mm-hmm.
This is just wrong. It's nakedly wrong. It is wrong to the point of criminality. I hope it has not crossed over into that. But it's the kind of thing where the government steps in and breaks up businesses. So let's not get to that point. Let's just all deal decently with one another.
Hear, hear.
There's a shitload of money, as Chris points out, that just floats around in Hollywood. Okay, no one's pocketbook's going to get hurt.
Nobody's pocketbook. You know what? It's that if you think your pocketbook is hurt because you can't afford your third house,
then fuck you.
Then, yeah.
That's what I say.
Yeah.
Fuck your third house and fuck you.
Yeah.
That's what I say.
Because that's kind of what it is. Where's my third house? Some city that's going to be underwater in like 10 years.
I will watch your third house burn down while you stand there. Okay. And not give you any help. Okay, fuck your third house.
I'll be drinking water as you're burning.
Right. Oh, fuck your 19th car. Fuck your second girlfriend that's not your wife. Fuck all of that shit. I'm trying to have everybody in the fiduciary relationship behave as they agreed to behave. Mm-hmm. That's it.
That's the thing. If you don't want to behave that way, then don't
make that agreement.
Yeah, then just be. Don't call yourself agency. Call yourself studio.
Which is basically what the code of conduct is. This is the agreement we want to make with people. Mm-hmm. You don't want to do it? Perfectly fine. I'm going to step over to Gersh now.
Right.
See ya.
See
ya. You know? Simple. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that's a problem. You know?
Yeah. Interesting. All right. Cool. Well, that was good. That's awesome. Anything else in there you think we need to cover for the kids?
I'm going to final cut on this particular episode. I said a lot of shit, man.
Do you think you did?
No.
Oh. Alexis, what it's do you too care late. Now?
Who cares? Oh my God, my career is either burned or not by now.
Shit. Keep writing, awesome. keep honing a craft,
right?
As always.
No, but this I think this is a really important conversation we had to have. We all know, all of us are guild members, and there's we're getting a lot of emails from the guild about this. You mm-hmm. know, these conversations. So mm-hmm. you know, I'm as one of the committee members, I'm getting I'm being invited to a lot of these. Go ahead.
I would like to say one thing, and it's what this article brings up. When you're reading the trades, Deadline mm-hmm. or Hollywood Reporter, Variety, all of that stuff, I'm not going to say don't believe what you read. What I'm going to say is if the tone of the thing couches this in the language of battle, of losses and wins, mm-hmm. of our side, the writer's side, being the bad guys in any particular way, take that with a grain of salt. Right. That's someone shaping data. This is a very simple fiduciary discussion between clients, right, and their employees, their advocates, about how we would like the contract to be going forward.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's it. There's no. It's not any sexier than that. It is not any more dastardly than that.
Right.
Okay. It's very simple. The conversations really don't need to be in multiple negotiations. Mm-hmm. We would like it to be this way. Tell me why we're wrong. Those reasons don't add up to anything, so you'll be signing this agreement, I presume. Right. It's pretty simple,
yeah.
Right? All the rest of the shit is, we'd like to keep all this extra money we try to make. You guys are bugging us. Well, tough. Right. Like, just be decent people. It's very simple.
On that note, that's what's up. Where you at, Tracy Grant?
Tracy Grant on Facebook, Twitter, at The Real Trey, TheReelTray. See if I can get my Graham for you on times. Tracy Grant, TracyGrant, 3559 on the Graham. Get at me. Also doing a web series soon. Nina Jenkins, Neighborhood PI, if you're in the LA area around April or so.
You got to read his PI book.
It's picking up the camera for the first time. No, I would love to.
I got to tell him. I'll give it to him.
If you're in LA for real, you're looking to crew up. Get at me for real. We're interested.
Okay. Well, talk to me about it. We'll have to get into that. Where you at, Jeff Thorne?
I'm at jeffreythorne.com. It's a kind of a clearinghouse. If you don't want to go that route, just hit me up at Winterverse on Twitter. My Twitter account is a bumpy ride, so if you're looking for some PG or G-rated stuff, you probably want to steer clear. And if your politics are anywhere towards MAGA, no point in checking me out. Literally no point. But yeah, that's where I'm at.
Okay, good. Where are you at, Chris?
Unauthorized CBD.
Wait, I apologize. Can you just blump that burp? Can you
vote for the show?
Yes.
I just wrapped up the Black Panther cartoon series, which is up for an NAACP Image Award. Black Panther's Quest. It's on their site. It was on Disney. I'm presuming they're going to keep running it for whatever time.
I can't read that. I don't have my glasses.
There'll be a link in the show notes for.
There'll be a link in the show notes, but please go and vote for us. Yeah. It was something new and something different. Disney put itself out on a limb. Marvel Disney put itself out on a limb to do this version of this show this way. And I'm kind of excited that we even got nominated, frankly.
Awesome.
But Team Panther really should get that award. You can vote often. You can vote early. It's not like it's not a real election. You can actually vote multiple times if you want. So please do.
No, no, let's make it a real election, Ben.
Exactly. You
know, vote.
Yeah, a lot of people put their heart and souls into this season, and I would like to see them get this award. So please please vote. It's not for me, by the way. It's not for me. It's literally this will be a vote for the team, Team Panther.
All right. Thank you.
So cool.
Good. Where are you at, Chris Derrick?
Unauthorized CBD on Twitter and Instagram and shadowboxercinema.net, where you can find me, ask me questions, read some articles about the top 100 ASC films. I'm doing a little series on that over the next couple weeks, you know, things like that.
Cool. And then we got my man sitting in here with us, little baby writer, Jasani Drew. Where you at, Jasani?
What up?
Oh my God.
So,
I mean, what?
It's caught me off guard
with that one. Kids
it's
today.
Trademark. It's cool.
Where you at?
You can find me on Twitter, my first name and last name. First name J E S A N I, last name Drew, then Drew Barrymore. And on my Instagram, you can find me Visionary Alignment.
I would have said Drew Hill, but you know, that's just.
Well, I told Drew Barrymore that I use. That I use her name, and she loved me for it. We made a bond, so now I'm going to use it forever.
Cheers today.
Love you,
so unfair. Life is so unfair.
Blew my mind.
And I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter, at Hilliard Guest. You guys can follow the show, Screenwriters RR on Twitter. Any questions, screenwritersrantroom at gmail.com. Please go on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, whatever you guys listen to. Give us a 5-star review. We really need that for the metrics to keep us up there at the top. Big shout out to Lisa Bolacaja, whatever the hell
please
she is.
Back,
talking about her car broke or some shit.
Come
whatever.
Back, Lisa.
Whatever. She ain't gonna worry me. She ain't gonna worry me. What was I gonna say? Something else. Oh, you know what I've been listening to that just came out about a month ago?
Mm.
It's a new specials album. It's called Encore.
Get out.
It's off.
You mean new,
chain.
New?
New, new.
What?
New, motherfucker, new.
What?
Off the chain. Had to give him a shout out.
Nice.
Oh, you know what was dope? That thing I sent you on the Clash.
Oh man,
there's the
Chuck D does a new podcast on the Clash.
On the Clash.
Chuck D,
dude.
Chuck D.
Wait, what?
It's dope as shit.
And it's just about the Clash.
Just about the Clash.
Just about and he combines why
I feel like I'm having a stroke.
He combines how Public Enemy is punk. And the spinoff and how they created it.
Sure.
And he intertwines.
It's
he intertwines
so dope.
The you would love it.
Well, he is the epitome of Public Enemy.
His radio show for people who aren't aware, and You Don't Stop.
Right, right.
It's on Sirius and a lot of other public stations. And You Don't Stop, which is crazy.
It's called Stay Free. Move out the way. Stay Free, The Story of the Clash. It's on Stitcher.
Okay.
Dude, it's off
Charles.
The chain. It's off the chain. You got to get that shit.
Yeah, that's dope. That was real dope. I was like, oh, shit, this is going to be live.
Came out like it's 2 weeks
yesterday.
Ago.
It's only one episode, but it's dope. It's
off
real dope.
Off the chain. So we appreciate everybody listening to the show. Please go on our what, Chris?
Our Patreon page. There'll be a link in the show notes with the link to the NAACP voting link and
good.
To the pod and to the Clash podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think we should drop this tomorrow. I think we should drop this one tomorrow.
All right,
just because it's so current and what's going on for sure. That's what's up. I'm gonna leave it right there. Big shout out to everybody. Thank you guys again for coming the other night. I owe you a huge apology, Tracy.
You don't owe me nothing.
Trip. I invited him to come to the watch party for my episode.
That was great, by the way.
Deadly Class.
Deadly Class, baby.
That was the shit.
And I said save the date and didn't realize that he's one of the three people that I didn't remind him. Here's the flyer.
God.
So I apologize. It's great. My dude.
If there is anybody on the planet who does not owe me anything, right, it's Hilliard Guest.
But look,
no sweat.
I wanted you in the house.
Bruh.
You've been there since day one.
Well,
so look.
Listen, I'll be there for the next one.
Yes, of course. There'll be plenty more. So anyway, thank you to everybody who came. For those who don't know, I co-wrote the episode Rise Above on Deadly Class episode 7, which is actually 106. But anyway, it's a whole nother long story for the youth. Anyway, but they call it Seven, so I'm going to call it Seven.
It's Seven. Mama named it Seven, I'm going to call it Seven.
It's cool. It's cool. On the script, say 106. But
wow, Hilliard. Let it go, man. Let it go.
Now, we all had a problem in the room, so they just me.
Let it
just
go.
It's a bullshit.
It's literally airing. Let it go. It's over. You've done
DVD it. DVD is coming out soon. Let it go. Let it
doing
go.
Everything already. It's done.
Fine, bitches. Fine. So y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. On the show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, everybody?
2019.
Peace, y'all.
I'ma say what I feel. And I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Rant Room. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the Rant Room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Rant Room.